Wrestling has more than one royal family.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this week's episode of Action for Everyone for this here April 4th, 2027. It is day two of WrestleMania, which is there are conflicting opinions on how good day one was. But I think everybody's in agreement that the women's triple tag team match that absolutely put Jade Cargill over was terrific. Liam will have more opinions, but. One thing I want to announce before, well, I guess I should introduce Liam first. Liam O'Donnell, how are you today?
Well, it's the first time I've been introduced first. It always goes vice versa. This is,
I know, we're
breaking tradition. I'm doing great. Thank you.
I need to keep you in your place, but, but I want to bring up because obviously it seems like we should be doing some wrestling talk on this episode, but we are not going to be because it's not necessarily going to be a regular thing, but it is going to be a thing that's happening. They've got arrangements to set it up and record it this week. Wrestling for Everybody with Liam O'Donnell and Brandon Streisnig is a thing that's going to be happening. So if you're wondering, go
Liam,
ahead.
Liam the Anvil O'Donnell and Brandon the Heartbreak Kid Streisnig. Yes.
If you're wondering why we're not going to spend more time talking wrestling today, that is why. And as always, joined by Vice Victus. Vice, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing okay. We're going to have an action-packed episode today, action-packed weekend, so we're ready to get into it.
And producer Max behind the scenes, as always. Max, welcome.
Hi. I'm good.
All right. And we have a very, very special guest. As most of you know, a pretty big martial arts action movie came out this week, Monkey Man. We have somebody who has been kind of as big a part of this show as damn near anybody, going all the way back to the Atkins Undisputed days. Even though we've never talked to him before, because he has been such an integral part of action movies for the last 15 years. Braheem, how are you today, man?
I'm good, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
For those who don't know, you're going to know a whole lot about Braheem after this, but Braheem is one of the best behind-the-scenes stunt people, choreographers, coordinators working in the business, hands down. He often works with Scott Adkins, has doubled him a handful of times, but has also fought him multiple times. For the Adkins Undisputed fans, Boyka 4 is probably the first place he stuck out to you. And for me, that's where he first stuck out, but a movie we're definitely going to have to talk about later, because it is another one of those patron saint movies of A4E, is he did stunts for War. So we will absolutely, like, we are in the presence of legend here, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm going to kick it over to Liam, because it turns out that, Brahim, you just kind of wrapped up on a little project with our boy here. Liam, talk about it.
Yes, Brahim, again, thank you for coming.
Welcome.
You know, it was such sort of a whirlwind on Warpath that, like, this feels like the first time we're really even getting to talk to each other, because it would just be, yes, like in passing, and it's all crazy. And even then, so Scott, you know, I've been kind of pretty open about how many days he was there. So we did his drama up front, and then it was going to be, you know, 5 or 6 days of nonstop fighting. And, mm-hmm, you know, we're in Batam, Indonesia, and the stunt double that they had for him was not quite convincing, and was not quite the exact same size as Scott, and all that. And so he came back, and we're sitting at the Video Village, and just like, I'm kind of freaking out, like, who can we get? I need someone. We need someone here. And I think it was Mike Leader and Scott and I were all kind of trading texts, and your name came up, and I was like, oh wait, I'm friends with him on Facebook. Right.
Yes.
And just immediately hit you with a Facebook message. And because you are living in Thailand, it was very, and of course you've worked in Batam before, it was like such a quick and easy fix to get you out there right away.
Yeah, I mean, at the time in 2023, actually, I came back to Thailand because I met my wife in Hungary, and my wife is Thai. So I moved out of Thailand at the time during right after I wrapped Monkey Man, I went back to France, and I was done with Thailand. But then after I met my wife, of course, I came back a little bit to Thailand to fix her visa and also to get my son back to France with her. And I was in the process of leaving Thailand when you guys contacted me. So it came out of nowhere. I was in a restaurant, and then all I know is like, can you come tomorrow? I'm like, oh, wait a minute, my hair is short. Usually I see Scott is having like a lot of hair. I'm like, okay, how are we going to do this? And then you guys just contacted me, and next thing I know, I was in the airplane again to go to Batam, but in a different Batam this time, because it was not with all the COVID restrictions, all like the quarantine and all that. So it was much, much, much better. And I love that place, man. The studio in Batam, Infinite, the crew, you know, John Reddle, who was running the place over there. Like, it's very, very good. It's a nice little place.
Our Warpath DP and studio runner, John Riddell. Yeah, that was, I feel the same way. I really do love working there, because it's sort of like, I always say it's like all kind of movies are a little bit like summer camp, but that one's really like summer camp, where you're all kind of all stuck in this peninsula of this island. And it's kind of takes a long drive to go anywhere outside of that area. So you definitely, you know, you form bonds, and you're kind of all there focused on it together. It's not like when you're working on a movie in a city and everyone kind of goes out and goes their separate ways after wrap. It's kind of, it has a nice family vibe. And I before we get into obviously Monkey Man, which you were there for much longer, and I've been talking about on this podcast, is that, like, you know this, whenever you go and work on a new project, people always talk about whatever the last project was, and like, they tell you all these crazy stories, and all I heard were crazy stories about Monkey Man, because it was during COVID and it was an incredibly long shoot. Incredibly challenging, and so I just always would be like, what is this movie? It sounds so crazy. But I did want to talk about, because I've been, you know, editing Warpath. I'm almost done with you know, my kind of first cut to send to the producers this week. And so I was going over a stunt of the still that I sent you, and you know, you had to do a very difficult kind of awkward roll over this table.
Yes.
And you know, I'm going through the takes and I'm like, oh, you know, that wasn't the right one. This is the right one. And I realized you nailed it on the first take and we should have just moved on.
Yes. But until my head landed on the ground.
Like most professionals that I've met, you guys always want one more. And the second take, you did the rock and roll and you land right on your head. And right off the table to the head. And then we're like, okay, we're done. We got it. Nope. I want one more.
Let me do one more. I knew it. I was like, well, first one, I kind of nailed it. I'm okay. And I was like, well, you know what? Maybe I can do it a little bit better. And then I tried to do something a little bit more different. I was like, okay, maybe I'll go on the edge of the table even more. And I'll kind of like bend my back even more. And then I was like, boom, right on my head. With the two legs back behind my head. I'm like, oh shit, that didn't go my way. And then I was like, well, actually, that's not my head hurting. That's more my back. I'm like, okay, I'll do one more. And then I'm like, oh, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah. No, I was like, stop. You're good. We got it. And then going through the takes, I was reminded like, wow, that first take, nailed it.
That was, I mean, when you do stunts, you know, you always like try to do as best as you can and you try to deliver like what whoever hired you. You know, that's my motto. Every time I get hired on a job, I kind of like almost take it personally. I want, because my name is on it, I want to do a good job. Whenever it's like acting or like doubling or even doing stunts, fight coordinating, whatever I'm doing, I always try to put 100%. And I think we are very fortunate and very lucky to do the job we are doing. I mean, it's kind of like a dream come true for many of us doing movies. You know, you're a director. I've been doing stunts and movies, acting, all that for many years now. And I think, you know, you always want to keep your name and whatever you're doing at the best. And I think most people are this way, to get in a position where their name goes around and be like, okay, this guy does a good job.
No, yeah, you're very, very focused and very intense. And there's a part of the movie that I'd like to talk more about with you, but I want to hold off until it comes out because I think it's kind of a maybe not a spoiler, but it'll be a fun thing to discover later. So we'll save for another conversation.
I don't see any way you're going to be able to like keep it from being a spoiler, but yeah, we don't need to get into it right now. But sure. No, you know,
but I just to wrap it up, I just want to say you completely fucking bailed me out on that movie and it's awesome. And seeing the footage cut together, I couldn't be happier. So thank you again.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Let's do it again.
Yes, absolutely.
And thank you. This is one thing I will say, you know, Brahim, you're the latest in a fairly long line of fight choreographers and stunt people we've had on this show. And if there's one thing I've learned, so y'all are never fucking happy with a take, man. Like there's like 5% of the stunts you've ever done in your career, you're like, yeah, I nailed that. Like that one was good. I nailed that one. I'm happy with that. Like I remember back when I used to talk to Scott all the time, like I would talk to him about some of the most amazing stunts he did in whether it was Undisputed 3 or Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. And he would just be like, oh yeah, but did you notice that like my foot was off in this place? Like I fucked it up that way. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Right. Like you really, but there's to go with what you're saying. That's also why you guys are the best. That's why you have the reputations. That's why you get called when Liam's freaking out and Mike Leader says, what about Brahim? That's why you get called, because they know you are the best.
Yeah, well, the thing is this, you know, if your name is attached to a project, you know, I guess it's like almost you put a stamp, your stamp on the project, whatever you're doing. And it's a small world, like the action film industry is very small. Everyone knows each other. And it's very, very easy to kind of like be put in a situation where like, oh, you can be the guy who's hard to work with, or you can be like someone who's not going to be doing what he's told. So I believe that if you come on the job, you always have to give it 100%, even 200%, I would say, because your name is attached to the project. It's very important and the film lasts forever. No, your name is there. So I always, I'm kind of like Scott Sam. If I do something, even if my foot is not extended or if my I don't know, my punch is not at the right place, I always try to be like, okay, let's do one more. But usually, like Liam said, the first one is always the best, and then we just try to screw
that up. That's how I always feel from directing standpoint too, is that like, oh, my notes made this worse. Whenever you look at the first take and like it's better, you're like, God, I just need to shut up more often. But it is, especially on an indie small budget productions, you know, we don't get a lot of takes. We don't get a lot of time. So I'm always like confounded. I'm always trying to level up my game and look at why the stunt guys aren't moving on, because like every take looks good to me. And then I'll be like, oh, right, it's the third duck that they're, you know, that's not selling. So I think when your guys' brains and eyes can see it so much faster than a normal person, or even someone me who's been trying to do this for a living for over a decade, I'm still trying to see what you guys see, because the speed with which you guys can see whether or not a hit is sold correctly is kind of mind blowing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the lucky thing with Warpath, I mean, you're having Eco there with his team, right? I mean, it's like pretty much like you're having like a professionals, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Like
he's playing the game on a cheat code. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, I'm not taking anything away from Liam, but he's got the Eco team. He's got Louis Mandalore there acting. He's got Scott. He's got you. He's playing the game on a cheat code.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mandalore came after Brahim and Scott wrapped, which is unfortunate that they all couldn't be there at the same time, but absolutely. That was Mandalore's acting in the movie is definitely a cheat code. Yeah,
good.
Yeah, Brahim, I wanted to ask, you mentioned that how important it is to put your name, a stamp on the movie professionally. I want to ask you about it as an artist. So I guess the first thing is, if you tell us about your martial arts background, when you first started martial arts, what style did you use, and then going forward through the years. You know, your resume is so impressive and so diverse. I wanted to talk about which you think your signature style is as a martial artist on film, what you try to do to emphasize in your movies that make it stand out from other action artists.
Okay, well, you know, when I first started, when I was 14 years old. You know, I was playing actually soccer before that. I almost turned professional at soccer, actually. I got offered like a scholarship to go be a soccer player and all that, but that was not what I wanted to do. So I saw a movie, a Jackie Chan movie, when I was 14, and then it changed my mind about everything. So I started with Aikido because it was the only thing that I had next to my house. Then I went on, I did karate, then I discovered tricking, and I think tricking was kind of like the thing that made it clear for me that I could basically use that to make a living, because at the time when I started to do movies, Ong Bak just released, and also you had like Scott doing movies like Undisputed 2, and there was the use of tricking was very popular back then. So I kind of like took advantage of it and used it in the movies myself. That's kind of like how I got my start in movies, by doing tricking. Then when I became a choreographer, the way what I was, that I always try to do is I look at movies, at the trend of every movies, and I try to kind of like go and learn from real martial artists, different styles. For example, I trained jiu-jitsu for 9 years. I practiced wrestling as well for now over 5 years. So I always try to put like something from different martial arts in the fight scenes that I do. And I always try to find a way to make it in a way more realistic. And I observe a lot of like real fights, MMA fights, or other even real street fights. And I like to take something from these fights and kind of like see how people move in real life or in an MMA fight. For example, I used stuff that I saw in the Khabib versus Conor McGregor fight. In Monkey Man, I saw something that Conor did to Khabib during the fight. And I was like, that kind of looks cool. So I put it in the movie. Even like stuff like that I saw, for example, in a street fight, I kind of like try to put something in there to give it like a more of a realistic side. And that's basically how I kind of like approach my style. Try to take like different martial arts and blend it together. And so you cannot call it like, let's say, you cannot call it karate or silat or jujitsu. It's kind of like a mix of everything.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, and I speak to also because I think we talked to choreographers over the years, and they've kind of mentioned that the audience themselves is getting a little smarter. They can start to see themselves the moves or the styles, and so it's really interesting that you can, for your part, to mix it up again, kind of throw us for a loop and keep us guessing. Really interesting.
Yeah, that's correct. Like the audience sees everything nowadays. You know, people because you know the use of the behind the scenes. For the marketing of the movie and all that, you can see everything behind the scene, right? So whenever you see a wire, whenever you see like a stun double, people start to understand what's happening, really. So I guess nowadays people are more educated in like what's a rear naked choke, what's an armbar, what kind of punch, because you know, like the audience changed over the years, and also because of the internet, also it helps a lot the audience. So yeah, people are it's getting harder and harder to please the audience.
let me just ask one follow up to that, Vice, and then I will kick it back over to you. But that is something that you bring up that I was going to ask you about later, but I want to kind of bring it up now. Is that your long history working with Tim Mann? Because Tim is just like that too. Tim is a sponge, right? Tim watches all these fighting styles. Tim has Tim's fighting style is he has no fighting style. He just incorporates everything he can. And you guys work so well together. I don't necessarily have a question there, but I think it's a compliment that I understand why you guys work so well together, because I've met Tim only once, but it was a fascinating conversation. You almost can't get him to answer a question because he's so like agnostic about every martial arts style that he believes in, that it's like he can't. You know, well, what were you thinking with this? He's like, I don't know. I did what I thought looked good, and you said, I saw this in a fight, and I thought it looked good, and I incorporated it. But you can tell that both of you, every fight you watch, whether it's like you said, UFC or MMA or YouTube or even fucking Trickers, I know from your bio you trained with Cascade. Like are a true Trigger. Like you have just. You're an encyclopedia of fight styles. And that's, I think, what makes you guys such effective choreographers, because you can choreograph anything that somebody asks you. We'll come back to it after Monkey Man. But, one of the things we talked about off mic is your work in India. And I think that's why you and Tim are so good in India, because those are very different fighting styles. But let's come back to that after Monkey Man. So Vice, let's get into some Monkey Man here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. From the action standpoint, well, you mentioned all the kind of behind the scenes and the press release, and one of the things that the star/director Dev Patel, he had talked about a lot, is that he wants to be influenced by more of the modern Asian styles, not just like traditional Hong Kong, but a Korean revenge style or just Slat Indonesian style. Was that part of the guidelines for you, or did he tell you like I want to try this vibe. What can you do with it? Or did he going to give you more freedom to see you brought something to the table and you tried it out, see if it worked?
So how it was, basically, I got the script. Then when I got the script, I created every fight scenes in my head and on paper. Then I brought with me a previous operator. His name is Steven Rainey. A very, very good previous operator. He's been a friend of mine for many years. So he knows how I work. I know how he works. So it was very important for me to have a guy like him with me by my side. And then we created the action. And Dev would always basically tell me what he feels like his character in the movie would do. So he gave me guidelines first when I started, when we had Zoom meetings. He gave me some guidelines. And the whole concept was kind of like a trapped animal. To be able to portray an underdog who is not the best physically, having a lot of trauma and using every element or every object he can find to get the job done. So then when I did the fights, I tried to put that in the fights, which means like I didn't try to make the fights very clean and very choreographed in a way that we would have like endless punches and kicks back and forth. What I try to do is I try to get the job done as quick as possible. If you, the studio, the Universal, they uploaded the kitchen fight on YouTube. And if you can see the kitchen fight, it's kind of like a train that doesn't stop. Yeah. It just starts and it just keeps going, 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 going. And it just dispose of every stunt guy that comes in his way. One or two moves done. The way it goes, it's like the Snowpiercer. It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It just keeps on going and going and going. It never stops. So that was the way that we thought about it. The first in the start of the movie, we wanted them to be like a human punching bag, and then later on, we were like, okay, as he gets better, as he trains, let's now have him be like a train without brakes, like just keep going and just kill people as quick as possible. And Dave did a wonderful job at this. He surprised me. Really, he did surprise me. He was world class. I couldn't believe it when I saw him perform all that stuff. And he was the one calling for longer takes, because to cover the stunt department and to cover everybody, the whole production, we did cut the fights. The original previous had more cuts because we were thinking, okay, let's kind of like make it in a way that Dave is going to be able to do. But he wanted longer takes, and surprisingly, he did it. But it was almost like, kind of like, he always told me like it was almost sadistic. He would be the one asking for it, and then when he would be there to do it, he would always tell me like, I can't believe I'm the one who's asking you to make it longer. I'd be like, yeah, I mean, we had cuts, but you want to do it longer? Let's just do it. That's it. Yeah.
Well, and it is very clear that, you know, Dev is coming at this movie from a place of authenticity. Like this isn't necessarily a vanity project for him. But you've also still got to make a guy who, despite his experience, you got to make him look good. He's the movie star and the director of the movie, and you have had to do that on more than one occasion for people. What is it like having to try and take somebody who's not a traditional action star necessarily and make them look good?
Well, first of all, it's very scary because the people who were involved with this project is kind of like they were gonna bring the John Wick team first to do this movie. And I'm getting called last minute. I'm in Thailand during COVID. The borders are closed. The embassies are closed. A trip that takes only 2 hours to do took me 2 days with my team. So it was a lot of pressure. And to be honest, I had no idea that, like, how physically gifted Dev would be. To me, when I got the call, I knew he was one of the most talented actors there is. Like, I saw Slumdog Millionaire. It's one of my favorite movies to this day. I saw Lion as well, Hotel Mumbai. I saw all those movies, and for the drama part of it, well, I always loved these movies. But I had no idea how good he was as to become an action star. That was not something I was picturing in my head. So for him, the most challenging part was not really to get him to be good at choreography, because when he came to the training space, I realized that, first of all, he had a black belt in Taekwondo, so he was okay in terms of movement. And second, he could follow my choreography. He has a very good memory. What was the hardest part was to keep him out of injuries. That's the part where it was super difficult, because whatever we were trying to do to keep him out of injuries, because of the workload that he had, he is a director, he's the main actor. We are in a whole pandemic lockdown, and he's having to do all these fight scenes that he wants to do himself. So he got hurt, of course, but the hard part was to minimize this injury. Like, he hurt his hand, he broke his toes, he dislocated his shoulder. So that was the hard part, to kind of like keep him going through the movie, get through all these fight scenes. But at some point, even the producer was coming to me and asking me like, okay, I think that's going a little bit far. Can you please try to tell him to use the stun double more? And I was like, I'm trying my best to do so, but wanting to.
The producer's trying to make you tell the actor, you know, the star director what to do. The typical producer move there. My question is like, is it, how do you even move on from a take when he's the star and the director? Is that difficult? Because he's in the middle of it, and it's hard to even know if he's got it yet, right?
Yeah. Well, Dev is a very, very, he's very precise, and he's very, very, he trusts himself a lot. So that will take me, the DOP, the camera operator, to really, really tell him we've got it. Like, we've got it.
That's really what I figured.
Yeah, it will take a lot of effort. And he's the same, like, as I mentioned before, you know, he really, really wants to make sure, like, that's the one. Not only for the acting, but for the action even more. So,
I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but like you said, I saw the stuff that's on YouTube. Vice saw the movie, but one of the things that pops out to me is the production design, and like the environments are all so integrated and well lit. Like, the money of the movie is on the screen within the fights. It's not just two people in a corner. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's always the stuff that impresses me, you know, kind of going to the Chad Stahelski method, where he's just like, it all matters. It's all about the production design. It's all about the camera work. It's all about the extras. It's all about that, like, you know, that candle in the background being in the right spot. So I found all of that very impressive.
It's all about a producer not taking $5 million of a $7 million budget.
that's very important. Like, the background, the extras. Luckily, you know, I believe, you know, the whole lockdown thing, it was a blessing in disguise, because we couldn't go anywhere. We were stuck in Turi Beach, you know Turi Beach, right?
Oh yeah, I know. Well, that Sir John was stuck there, and that's how he met his wife.
There you go. He met his wife on
Monkey Man in Turi Beach. Yes.
So we were all stuck there. So I believe, you know, it was a blessing in disguise, because everyone was just focused on just doing the movie. And the great thing we had, I mean, it's, you know, props to Infinite. They had very, very, very good crews over there. Mm-hmm. They built every set. They really, really made sure, like, whatever I needed during, like, let's say the fight scenes, props, breakaways, they were on point with that, man. I've worked in many places in Asia. I do believe that studio there is one of my I think it's my favorite. It's, to me, that's like one of the best studios I ever shot, because the production value that they could get on Monkey Man, and like the speed at which the Indonesian crew, they were working, it was very, very good. Because, like, I don't think, you know, I don't think if they did that movie in another place than, like, in Batam, I don't think it would have been that successful, because the whole way the studio is built, it's almost like made for like an emergency like COVID.
Yeah. Because, no, I know.
You know, it's small. It's contained.
It's a bubble. It's
close to the studio. You know, every hotel is around the studio, so it's made to be in a bubble. So that was perfect.
Yeah. No. And I think, you know, Scott kind of said very similar things. You know, not to throw any other Asian countries under the bus, but he just said like the energy here is great. He was kind of shocked. He didn't really know what to expect. But the crews are just so it's part of the Indonesian sort of spirit. They're very happy, optimistic people. And
yes, that's great.
Yeah.
They have that. Yeah. You know, they have very, very good. They have a very good mindset. They are very, very, they smile a lot.
Yes.
And I think, you know, the whole, that whole thing of like having this kind of good energy on set, I think it makes everyone wants to come back the next day. And it makes everybody, let's say, life a little bit better, because sometimes you can, you know yourself, you know, doing many stressful hours and like day after day after day, it can be stressful. So I think, you know, that studio is very, very good. And like hats down to all the Indonesian crew, all of them.
I just want to say really quick, because I didn't realize this until a few weeks ago when Liam sent me something from the movie, that for those who don't know, Infinite Studios is basically the product of a lot of people, but most importantly, Mike Will Yuan of Buffalo Boys fame, who is a great director, a great creative mind. And so, yes, we actually had somebody on either Twitter or our Discord ask, what if somebody bought an island to make nothing but action movies? And that's exactly what Infinite Studios is. It's literally an island to make nothing but action movies. I've been doing a lot more digging into it and research into it the last few weeks. And I am absolutely gobsmacked. I am just absolutely in awe of what this place is.
I mean, the history of me with it was obviously beyond Skyline, but I think what I didn't do well back then, which I got to do better on Warpath, was like use more of the backlot and use more of what they'd already set up to my advantage. Because Beyond Skyline was written as this like big crazy adventure that hopped to all these different locations. And so we're still, even though we're in Batam, we're going to Joja to do these temples. And then we had to finish those fights in Batam. So that after Beyond Skyline wrapped there, Timo's headshot shot there with Eco. And so we had already been reusing sets from some, you know, horror movie that we did for our catacombs. Then they reused our catacomb sets for the prison and headshot. And then they reused them, I think, again for Buffalo Boys, which obviously Buffalo Boys takes place in the whole back lot back there. And then, you know, flash forward to Monkey Man, which they used a bunch of different sets there. We used some of their sets for Warpath. There's one of my favorite fight scenes, you know, where they're, you know, Nongsa Beach, you know, that little beach area. I think it was like some type of temple set that they built for Monkey Man with like a bunch of candles and stuff on the wall.
Yes.
So we came in there, we ripped a wall out and it was all dilapidated and it looked post-apocalyptic anyway. And we're like, perfect. Let's build our village around here. And so it is, you know, like the grand tradition of indie action movies that you just keep reusing what's there in your own way.
Great studio. The best. I mean, to me, it's one of the best I ever shot, you know, I mean, best place, you know, nice hotels, nice restaurants, good crews. I mean, very, very easy to work there, man. Like,
I'm gonna send this episode to Mike, and so he can Venmo us a little money for this free glow up on Infinite Studio.
Well, I just thought it's fascinating that I'm glad you have such a positive experience during the creation of it all, and everybody's just it's a fun, I guess, environment. Because the movie itself, Monkey Man, is really fucking dour. It's like a really like, purposely like a sad, like, you know, revenge tale. It's, you know, very.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, do you prefer, through your career, do you prefer those more? Those kind of like a dark energy kind of movies? I think those might be, they work well better with your style of action and violence, because, it seemed like a sweat. Like, I remember, I know you did stunts in like The Foreigner with like Jackie Chan, among other films with him. That has a similar energy where it's this kind of desperation, the sadness, and it kind of enhances the violence. So is that kind of what you want to go for when your movies as well? Like,
definitely, I love it, man. When I get called for something like Monkey Man, I think it's the dream of any fight coordinator to get a movie like that, because you get to do all this violence on screen, and you know the script calls for it. And to me, it's something where I do enjoy that style of movies for my own personal like experience, because I can get like to really reuse some of my ideas. And to me, it's something that I enjoy more than doing like, I would say like a comedy movie or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's a movie like Monkey Man, it was very stressful to get done. There was a lot of changes. A lot of things got scrapped, and we had always to make stuff as we went on set. Sometimes we would change stuff right on the spot, and for that kind of thing, you know, your mind has to be very quick. So yeah, movies like that, you know, it's a dream come true, but at the same time, it turns into a nightmare very quick. So yeah. And movies like that, I enjoy doing them, like, because, you know, you can bring some good violence on screen, you know, and I like to do that.
Yeah, there's a highlight. Well, we want to avoid spoilers for people who have seen it, but there's a highlight kill in the knife in the elevator with the teeth.
Yeah.
That's oh, it's beautiful. Like, was that like kind of how did that come about? Like, you mentioned that this trapped animal kind of energy. Was that was that kind of your idea to like get the mouth knife thing on, or?
Yeah, well, it was kind of like a collaboration between me and Dev. So we were trying like to find a cool way that has never been done before of how to kill someone with a knife. If you look at the elevator scene, you know, I use the knives in a very clever way when I'm fighting. Like, I'm not going to spoil it for people, but it's like kind of like, I think like, in a way that not just stab someone, but kind of like using different knives and in different like scenarios. But the last bit, when he's biting the knife and stabbing it in the neck of the stunt guy, we were trying to find a certain way to finish the scene and to be like, okay, how can we make it different? I was thinking of different cool ways to finish it and all that. And then as I was struggling with the stunt guy, trying to think about it, I told the stunt guy, okay, grab my hand and just like twist it. Okay, what's happening with the knife now? Oh, the knife is almost falling off my hand. So then Dev looked at me like, just grab it with your mouth. I'm like, okay. So I just grab it with my mouth and I'm like, okay. And just stab him. He's like, yeah, how would you stab him? Just like this. He's like, so you just like this, just stab him like this. Like, then Dev tried it. We shot it for him. And he's like, that looks cool. At first, you know, when you do things like this, it can be taken by the audience two ways. It can be just like, wow, or just like, what did they just do? Like, they can laugh, or they can be like, that's the best thing that ever happened. Mm-hmm. But when people saw that, the people that saw the movie, everyone said, they all went like, ouch, that looks painful.
Yeah.
So in a way, like, we like, it was good. That's something that we never saw someone do that, basically, in any movie.
That's always the goal, right? Right. The goal is always you want to do something that has never been seen before. Like, like as a diehard action fan, nothing makes me more excited when I watch an action movie. And if I don't get this high, I'm fine with that. That doesn't mean it's a bad movie, but nothing makes me more excited than when I'm watching an action movie and I see, you know, just to use an example, Eco Uwais fucking using, you know, blades to tear up an alien. And I can legitimately say, I've never seen this before. Or when I first watched Undisputed 3 and watching, even though I'd already seen Undisputed 2, watching Scott and Marco Zaror go at it the way they do in that fight and be like, this is history. right here. Yeah. Like, this is a legitimate thing that has never been done before. And like, as an action fan, like, that's the juice, man. That's the shit that gives me the high. So like, mm-hmm. you know, I love that, like, the process of that, though, you talking about that, that's like, well, what if we just did this and would it look cool? And then it turns out it does look cool. And like mm-hmm. you said, a lot of times if you don't find that balance, then people, it's actually funny, you know, just talking about WrestleMania, my wife is not a wrestling fan. And so it was a very much a night last night of highs and lows for her, of things that just didn't work for her and that she thought looked stupid and all of that stuff. And then things that just blew her mind and was like, I can't believe people just did this. And that's what we're always looking for as action fans, right? And I love hearing that thought goes into it, that it's not just us as the audience that wants that, it's you as the creators that are looking for mm-hmm.
One of the thing that I, you know, that I learned a lot from Dev doing Monkey Man, I believe, you know, only an actor who's a drama actor first, not a martial artist, would become an actor. I think only that kind of actor can understand that. It's, you know, just doing punches and kicks for no reason, I don't think, you know, it's very something that people always remember. I think what people remember, it's moments. Like mm-hmm. moments in the fights where they go like holy shit moments, kind of. Yeah. So I believe like someone like Dev, what he reads, he doesn't read the fight scene, he reads the moments. He reads like in the script what his character is supposed to do. And I think that's something that back in the days, before I did Monkey Man, I was lacking in that department of like being able to kind of like read the script. Understand the script, really read it, not just like go through it, but read it and then make fights that make sense. Like the character is supposed to be having trauma in the past. He's supposed to be like a guy who's getting beat up. How can I make him unique? And how can I be making him in a way that he's going to fit his character? Because I believe like the main problem nowadays is people watch a movie, and I'm sure it's going to happen with Monkey Man, and then they want to do exactly the same thing, and it's going to be a trend. We had the trend with Ong Bak. Everybody was doing knees and elbows, and then we had the trend as well with The Raid. Everyone was trying to do Silat. We had the trend with John Wick. Everyone was trying to do Jiu-Jitsu, and I believe nowadays it's getting more and more complicated to kind of like give something new. But I think that's the problem, is not really people can't make fight scenes. I believe the problem is like, how can you get an exciting script to get people excited? I don't think the problem is the fight scene. I believe the problem is the script. And I think that Monkey Man, that the power that the movie has, people were always saying like, oh, it's gonna be like a John Wick ripoff or something, but after seeing it, they all said, oh, it's actually nothing like John Wick. It's something very, very different. It has his own kind of like story. It's more about inequality. It's more about vengeance for like it's more about like caste system. So I think, you know, what matters more is like having a good script. The fighting will get, it's something that comes, but from the script. That's the most important part, the script.
This has been a thesis of our show for a long time. I've always said that fight scenes need to tell a story. I'm just going to use an example from Undisputed yes. 3. What do people remember from the last fight of Undisputed 3? There's all that high tech, Marco and Scott going at it. As maybe the biggest Undisputed 3 fan in the world, when I think of that movie, what I remember is Scott putting a shit-covered mop around his knee and Marco looking at him and going, bravo. Like, that's the drama point. That is the yes. point that drives that fight home. That's what makes a fight. That's what takes a fight from a tech demo to something that is legendary and lasts exactly. forever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Liam, you agree with that, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm just sitting here kind of nodding along with you, but and I do think that's sort of where like I didn't come up as obviously a martial artist or a fight guy, so I come from the script, and I'm trying to like holistically bring all those things together, and finding the moments is actually. And that's been part of the evolution that I've gone through too, because I felt like, like Beyond Skyline, we didn't have any previs, and it was sort of, I've told this on the show a few times, so bear with me, audience. But it was like they did all the choreo, but they just kind of handed me like a locked off camera, and I'd never done action before, so I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And but my operator and DP was quite experienced, but so I felt like I just filmed all the fights in kind of a roving medium shot, and in editing, I felt like I didn't get enough close ups and reactions for those sort of moments. And so then in part three. Working with the real deal guys out of Berlin, very Hong Kong schooled. So like every like, 3 or 5 moves, there's always like a, and I actually had to cut those out of the fights because they did so many of them. So like we had enough. We had enough. But there was like the initial stunt cut was like every 2 fights. And I was like, all right, I think we have too many moments. But it's just part of that sort of balance. And then like the Scott Nico fight we did, like that stab through the shoulder, and then we kind of pulled it in, and one of the things we did on that, because we had in Indonesia we had such a big camera team, we just had one camera there that was always just doing a slow-mo like kind of close-up on their faces, which is not something you would normally do, and it makes like fight people very very nervous. But it's like, look, we're paying, we got four cameras here, like just do
Just use
it,
them.
just use it. And it's a very long fight, but there was two different spots in the edit where I went to that camera and sometimes didn't use it for slow-mo, but just like, oh, this is going to help get us around to this next move and sell it better just from this little thing to check in here. And then other ones was like we just go to the slow-mo just to get their faces for this kind of big moment and just slow things down and kind of like you guys said, like let the drama kind of breathe for a moment, because you have so many relentless kicks, punches, and traps that sometimes you just want to get those characters, bring them in, let the audience know where they're at mentally within this story, within this fight. So yeah, I mean, couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, I mean, there are different ways to shoot fight scenes, you know, like you're like shooting a fight scene is not actually very hard. You can shoot a wide shot and let the action play, follow it. It doesn't really matter where, if you have a good performer, it doesn't really matter where you're going to put the camera because you're going to see everything, like kind of like what's happening on the Red movies. You can see the whole body and the camera movements are just following and playing with the performers. All that, it takes just a very good camera operator. On Monkey Man, we had that. Dave put my previous guy to be the camera operator for the fight scenes. So we have that on Warpath. You're having one of Eco guys.
It was the same thing. It was Yandi, who Yandi was actually Ico's stunt double on Beyond Skyline. So I'd known him for 10 years and knew he was, as good as it gets. So when I went to Jakarta and they're doing the previs, I was like, there's no one that's going to be able to operate this as good as you. So we're going to call
That's
it
it.
the Yandi Cam. And so Yandi would be like, Yandi Cam, and he'd bring it in, and it was his special handheld like modified camera for all of those fight scenes. Yeah.
People sometimes I believe, you know, like nowadays producers, directors, they kind of like respect more and more the knowledge of stunt guys, and they kind of like understand now that stunt guys are actually filmmakers who understand how to shoot the action part of a movie. But it took some time, but I do believe that nowadays, you know, it's never been a better time to make action scenes and fight scenes because the respect that now the stunt guys are getting, so you get like better and better quality fight scenes nowadays.
Yeah, you said it took some time, and it's like, yeah, it took about 100 years, but
Yeah, it took some
we got
time.
there.
Vice, back to you for more Monkey Man talk.
Well, the thing is, I don't want to actually get into too many details because, again, part of the impact of the movie is this kind of unusual spiritual journey that happens. You know, it's a revenge tale, but there's mm-hmm. this unique element to it. This kind of that deals with specifically the Hindi spirituality to it. So I don't want to go into too much detail. But other than say, you mentioned like, well, as I was watching Monkey Man, I did kind of think of, strangely enough, The Beekeeper, Jason Statham's movie from earlier this year. And yeah. what occurred to me was that, just like you mentioned recently, the script is what matters. The script will keep people engaged with the yeah. action. And so The Beekeeper is a very bizarre, you know, heightened, crazy movie. But I think that people responded to it because in that story, he's doing this secret agent kind of wild action, but he's doing it because, you know, for the whole plot is he's getting revenge for scammers, people whose family has been scammed. And like in the real world, so many of us have, you know, older family members or people who have been fallen prey, victim to these phone scams and stuff. So like that part in that movie, it speaks very personally to yeah. us, the audience. You know, so you mm-hmm. so you want to see Jason Statham, you know, tear them apart, you know, so it all works. And so I felt that similarly in this one is, you know, you mentioned the inequality part of it all. You know, I think a lot of people are, well, here in America, but in general in the world, are struggling in various ways, economically and, you know, mentally. And I think this movie does speak to that very powerfully, that he's here, we have, you know, it's a kind of a classic, the classic story of a hero for the people, but it's this modern, relevant situation where mm-hmm. you have, you know, the people in power, but also using, you know, like they're using people's belief to their advantage. And Monkey Man, yeah. the hero, you know, he's fighting back at that.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a hero where you can kind of like relate to him in a mm-hmm. way, because first of all, in the movie, Dev is not, he's not huge or completely yeah. muscled up and all that. Of course, he's ripped in the movie, but he's not looking like physically so imposing. Like kind of like if you watch like Chris Hemsworth in Extraction, he's huge. Yeah. So you kind of like can relate to the character, and you can be like, oh, that could be me. That could be like an underdog. And we have like stuff in the, for example, there's that moment in the trailer where he's running to jump out of the window and he just smashes on the window and I fall back. I think like moments like this, like I said, you know, it's kind of like making the audience be like, yeah, that's more realistic. That could be me, you know? Yeah. And like you said, like more stuff that people can relate to is very important in a script. Yes.
Yeah.
It makes people want to see the movie.
Exactly. So yeah, I do hope that, you know, people, I hope word of mouth catches on, because, you know, I really enjoyed the film. I really enjoy, you know, that hero struggle, you know, mm-hmm. in this modern world, you know, this new take on this classic hero, you know, for the people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So like, yeah, Mike and Lima, I don't want to get too much further into details because, you know, I want to avoid spoilers for people. But I had Dusty send my questions. But, you know, just once again, I think Raheem, thank you so much for your time, and really appreciate it. And again, like I think, well, we're talking about Monkey Man today, but I think I'm almost overwhelmed by your body of work in general. You know, that, and as Mike had mentioned,
it's,
you know,
it's hard, right? Like it's Brahim. It's not just Monkey Man. It's hard not to, yeah.
But yeah, let's get into that body of work. Let's talk a little bit about that.
But I want to let Vice. I want to let cut Vice off. So I want to.
That's all my main thoughts for Monkey Man. If we have more things, we'll do after the fact. But just this is. I'm some people like highly recommended. Like this is not just like, you know, you hear all the comparisons to The Raid and John Wick, and that is part of it. It's part of the spirit, I guess. But like this is definitely its own thing, its own energy. And it's as much about the mood and the tension and the vibes as it is the violence. There's lots of actual mental and spiritual stuff going on in the film. That's, you know, and, you know, again, this is Dev Patel. Like you can imagine if you see like The Green Knight, you know, you've seen the kind of movies that Dev Patel has been in. Yeah, yes. Get kind of strange and ethereal. He puts that very much into this movie. You know, full of all the stabbings and punches and kicks. That part, spiritual element is very much a part of it. Mm. So I guess
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's very important.
Yeah, you know, taking the religion and the spirituality seriously. All these things that, for me as an American, I might not be familiar with, but I'm glad that we have people like Mateo Patel and people like you who have your team with you to kind of showcase this story that we might not know about normally. This is that's so important to I really feel like this is part of why action cinema is so. People always when they think about international film, you know, they think of all the classic French films or all the classic Japanese Kurosawa, but yeah. Action cinema is international cinema. It is telling these stories from around the world that we from our parts of the world might never know, and this is a great example. This is a great. Because it's a specific story, but it's made for everybody to see. And everybody can relate.
Yeah,
to it.
But it's a very hard story in a way that because I've been to India several times, and I understand the story of the movie because India it's a very tough place, and I believe they've portrayed it very well in the movie because it's a place that can be very hard hitting on you. And people definitely will relate to that movie. People from that part of the world will definitely relate to the movie, you know?
Michael, that's like I said, definitely people check out Monkey Man. It's a lot going on. And then we can talk about it more later on in the show or in the future. But I highly recommend this one. This is one of the standouts of the year for me.
So. Yeah, I know we've got Scott Mandelson on, and he really wants to talk about Monkey Man. So I think plus that'll give people a week to get out and see it, and we can actually do a proper spoiler-free discussion. So, but Vice recommends it. Max, you saw it. You recommend it?
Yes. Very much so. I that's a great directorial debut. You guys did some excellent work.
So thank you so much,
Brahim. I'm struggling a little bit because there's so many movies I want to ask you about. Because again, like I said, you have been a part of my life for 15 years. This entire podcast exists because Scott is my favorite actor, and I decided to start a podcast about Scott's movies. And we talked about you a lot because we had gotten to Ninja 2 before it kind of transitioned to this. But there's two big questions. One kind of movie related and one kind of culturally related. So let's start with the movie related one, which is you have spent a lot of time working in Western cinema, but you have also worked with Aamir Khan, Hrithik Roshan, Salman Khan, and my beloved, beautiful, high kicking, wonderful Hindi martial arts superstar, Tiger Shroff. Yeah. You have worked with literally every Indian actor that I think just kicks ass and rules. How did you get involved with working in India? And what is it like working with these? You know, we spend all this time talking about working with somebody like Dev, who's willing to abandon his ego and do this stuff. Indian actors don't get the option to do that. They are superstars. They are they can't. And I'm not saying that they're all egotistical. I'm just saying it is the new Hrithik Roshan movie. It is the new Salman Khan movie. Indian audiences don't care what the title is. They care that Aamir Khan's in it. What is it like working in that industry versus working in the West?
Okay, well, first of all, I got involved in the Indian film market because back in the days in Thailand, there was a lot of actually Bollywood movies or Telugu movies coming to shoot in Thailand. So they were always looking for stunt guys to join their projects. So then after a while, I started to get more and more contacts in India. So usually every year I would go to India 4 to 5 times a year, to work on different projects. And since, I'm born in France and I didn't know really about all these actors. Back in the days when I was younger, I would come on set and I didn't really know who they were. So I think that made the actors comfortable around me, but because I would never give them this, oh my God, you're a superstar. those guys are like, they can't walk even in the street. Some of these guys, they are like loved. They are completely like, they are like almost considered like God in India. So I believe that made like a lot of the actors comfortable with me. And those, they would always like at times ask the producers like, okay, can you bring Brahim on this project, or can he be on the project? I doubled a lot of actors in India as well. And the difference is, it's really, really a place where, first of all, the hours, working hours are, they it's long, man. They do not stop until it's done. So when you go there, you're going to have to think about like, okay, well, you're going to have to work your butt off. Second, it's all about like, it's almost like every movie there is like the Fast and Furious or Superman. Like in India, everybody can, like having a car flying in the air, it's no problem for India. Like it can be in every movie. Like every actor is like a Superman in their movies. And that's what the market is asking for. Their market is asking for it. To everyone, it might be like, wait a minute, but that's kind of like a little bit like stupid, but the market is asking for it. And, you know, it's kind of like every movie there is like Fast and Furious. It's over the top. It's, you need to kind of like give them like a lot of like visual stuff. They really love visual stuff. And also the use of wires. Like if someone get punched, it's really different from the West. In the West, people, you know, like people understand more action in a way that is like more realistic. But in India, it's more like huge visually, huge with wires, big reaction, big car, big muscles. It's kind of like right now they start to switch a little bit and go back. The productions start to go more, they get more westernized nowadays because the Indian audience is starting to kind of like becoming, they are becoming more like westernized. So I think like now the productions are kind of like going more into like the road of like Western production, which means like more realism in the fight scenes and less wire, less flying around.
Yeah, and I've actually noticed that in the, you know, you've worked on several YRF movies. You were on Ek the Tiger, you were on Tigers into High, you were on War. You know, and these are yet they still have the Indian hero cinema look, but they're very Western in terms of these are in fact like big budget Hollywood blockbusters, right? These are like War is like fucking Face Off. Like it's basically just a new Face Off. And so it is interesting because I'm very much a huge Indian cinema fan, but I'm actually kind of weirdly, like I am a big Bollywood fan because that's where my favorite actors are. But you know, so the Telugu cinema is still a little bit different for me. It's really the Bollywood cinema where I look and think they're really going full Western, because you get something like, you know, you get something like War, like we talked about, or you know, and or even something like Thugs of Hindustan. You know, these are very Western looking movies within through an Indian cultural lens. Because one of my favorite ones that you actually worked on is one of the, you know, for those who don't know, India is very famous for remaking Hollywood movies. And one of my favorite ones that you worked on is Bang Bang, which I absolutely believe destroys Night and Day. Like it is about 200 times better than the original one, even though it has Tom Cruise in it. You know, Hrithik Roshan can match Tom Cruise, but what's interesting is I am noticing in these movies more and more that realistic fighting, like even Tiger, who, you know, there's conflicts. As much as I love him, you know, he kicks like a dancer, but he's bringing proper martial arts to Bollywood cinema. And you've worked with him, and most recently, I haven't been able to see it yet because Netflix isn't releasing it, but you and Tim did Ganapath with him. Can you talk a little bit about working with him on that and what that was like?
Well, on Ganappa, Tim was the action director, and they were looking for like an actor to be the bad guy of the movie in terms of like fighting, because the movie has like a tournament, and they wanted like to kind of like someone to go against Tiger's character. So Tim called me, and he presented my photos to the director and to Tiger, and Tiger already worked with him on War. And I'm very lucky because at times, you know, when Scott, for example, doesn't want to do a movie, sometimes they come at me to ask me if I want to join the movie. So that's what happened kind of like on Ganapat. I believe they asked him first. And I think most likely it was super expensive and probably like I don't know how much he was, but they didn't want to do it. Then after the team basically brought me on board, and I kind of like got involved on it this way, basically.
We did a draft of up and coming action stars last year, and Tiger was I stuck my hand in the sand. But I also know, you know, he's not. Indian stars are weird because they, like you said, they don't come up necessarily as martial artists. They don't come up. And what you hope is that they can bring the acting, which is always a little hit or miss. But, you know, you have worked with some of the bigs. And so I guess I would ask if you had a choice, do you prefer the Indian system or the Western system? And you don't have to commit to that, because I know that's I don't want you to commit to a question that might, you know, offend somebody.
I like both, actually. There were both ways, you know. The chance that I had through my career is I could work with almost every film market. I could do Hollywood movies and know how the Hollywood people they work. Then I could do like Thai movies and see how in Thailand they work. Then I did many movies in China with Jackie Chan and his team. Then I did all these Bollywood movies and Telugu. And I believe, you know, if there's a camera and a film crew, I think it's a movie. No matter where you go, it's going to be the same way. You're going to have a camera. You're going to have like someone making the fights, you know, a director, producer. It's going to be the same. So to me, I don't mind doing Bollywood movies. I do know like some stunt coordinators, some fight coordinators, and even some actors. They don't want to sometimes do these movies because maybe they feel like it's a different, let's say, like lifestyle on set. It's a different like way of doing those movies. But to me, I wouldn't commit to I only need to do Hollywood movies. I only need to do Bollywood movies. To me, as long as I can make a living doing what I do, I think I'm happy.
So we have a couple theses on this show, but if there's one, it's that watching people get kicked in the face is a universal cinematic language. And that's part of what I've always tried to drive home with like Indian and like Bollywood and Telugu cinema is you're still watching people get punched in the face, man.
That's it. It's the same. It's just like a different market and for a different audience. That's it. I always say this, if people have no problem with Vin Diesel flying to the moon with a car, I think there's no problem with, you know, Tiger jumping in the air and kicking 20 people. So that's the same way.
You know? Yeah, no, I we've actually argued on this show that the Fast and Furious series has reached full Indian cinema like totally. Ridiculousness. It absolutely has. Yeah.
It did. It's even like I would say Bollywood is kind of like tuning down these aspects, like I said, over the years. It's starting to come like to a point where, like, okay, when I get called. Recently, since Monkey Man released, I think I received, I would say, probably like 8 movies to come and to join as a fight coordinator for in India. And all these movies always mentioned the same thing to me. They always said, we want the fights to be violent. and we want them to be realistic. I think nowadays it's kind of the opposite. Hollywood is going to an over-the-top kind of like a road, and now Bollywood is kind of like tuning down their action and kind of be like, wait a minute, we need to be more more like Western movies. And like I said, like Vin Diesel, like if you watch the Fast and Furious, the first one, it's real stunts. It's cars racing and all. Part two is the same.
DVD
part
players. Three
is the same. Yes.
But still then, DVD players, yeah.
Yeah, but then you're starting to go from the number five, six, seven, eight, nine. I don't even know which one. It's 10 now?
Ten was last year, yeah.
There you go. But now you're starting to get like stuff like, you know, one car going from one building to another. We're getting like cars going to the moon. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, if it's okay for Vin Diesel to do that, it's okay for Salman Khan or anyone in India to just fly through the air and punch people in the face.
The one that really struck me was in 8 when The Rock reaches out and with one hand turns a torpedo into another direction as they're on an ice thing. And I'm like, yeah, that's what John Abraham does all the time. Like these have gone full Indian cinema. So
yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's acceptable, man. That's movies. That's it.
Exactly.
No, but, and I love what you said for your answers that there, you don't have a preference in that, like all of them, because I think that that's kind of what the spirit of the show is that, you know, like Vice loves really dour, what he calls black coffee cinema, feel bad cinema. You know, Mike loves pretty much everything off the board. I'm always a little bit more cheery, optimistic, kind of a Sam Raimi type of splatter. Okay. So, you know, it's all about the preference, but to be in a position to work on those different types throughout the world, like obviously India, but also, you know, Jackie Chan and Donnie Yen, like you've got to do everything.
Yes. I mean, because if I didn't do these movies where, for example, in China, there is no previs. You show up on the set and they create the action and you have to do the action like they want you to do it. There is no prep. You just show up. What I'm going to do, you're going to fight this guy, that guy, that guy. And we're going to make it on the spot. So you do the fights. And as the day goes on, they create the fights on the spot and you have to perform them. So to some people, if they don't have this experience of like coming prepared already, they get lost. I saw people completely losing it, people getting doubled on the spot because they couldn't perform the stuff. And then they have to use like some guy who don't even look like them and not the same height and all that. So I believe like doing all these movies at an early age, going to India, going to China and all that, when I get on a movie where everything is prepared, to me, it's very, very easy. It's the same way when I got on Warpath and I got on, basically I flew and the next day I was working. I had no problem adapting because I was like, okay, well, I'm used to this. I'm very, very used to this kind of system of where like when I'm getting caught last minute and I just show up on the set and I just get it done. If I didn't do these movies in India where nothing is prepared, you just show up on the set and you do it, or like in China, I would never be able to do this. So to me, I would never say like, I just want to do this or I just want to do that. I think doing both of the world is what makes you better, because if you just get used to a certain system, then that's it. You're going to get into like times where you're not going to be able to deliver.
You know, I love that you said that because, you know, we added a couple different movies to add fight scenes at the last minute. And it's just because, it's usually just because I'm like, I've got Eco here and I'm going to add another one. And they're always like scrambling and it's a little bit crazy. And the fights are never quite as dialed in as the ones that are previs and everything. But making them is really, really fun. And because there is that sense of discovery on the day where it's like, oh, what if we did this? And so there's a joy to it in the process of that sort of like, no tightrope, let's just go and make this action scene today. We know we only have this amount of time. So, everybody, you know, has to kind of work together and be professional and figure out the best way to use it. But I don't know, there's a joy in both ways. So I agree with you there.
But don't you think, like, in a way, like, it's sometimes, you know, creating stuff on the spot can create better stuff? Because yes. You're kind of like in a situation where you're more stressed and you're in a situation where you're having like time pressure. So your mind works faster and your mind works better. And then more ideas, because on Monkeyman, I can tell you many of the stuff we came up with, some of the stuff I made that on the spot because of time or because of, for example, Dev couldn't use his hand. Or he couldn't kick that day, so I had to come up with stuff on the day. But then when I watched the final product, I'm like, there's something into coming up with stuff on the spot sometime where you kind of like get a little bit more mess, and that mess gives better energy to the scene. And I think sometimes some of the movies where everything is planned from A to B, you kind of like see the actors or the performers going through the motion, and there's yes. nothing worse than that. And yes. that's something that you agree with that, right, Liam?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was stuff in, to go back to just my own experience with Beyond Skyline, where Frank Grillo tore a hamstring. And so yeah. he couldn't do, I wasn't like 100% sold on him doing too many kicks anyway, but they were like, no, this will be a great back kick, and tore a hamstring. So then it was like, you could only just do these kind of heavy right punches, and that just fit his character better anyway. And so, yeah, you're kind of moving with whatever gets thrown at you. You know, there's a day that we got completely rained out and I had to figure out this whole other fight scene, and it ended up becoming the thing that spun into the whole like 360 shot around them. And that was all just at lunch that day. It wasn't something that...
Wait, hold on. How have we not had this conversation before? That literally the definitive shot of Beyond Skyline, that 360 shot you came up with at lunch that day?
No. I wanted to do an Avengers shot. So I wanted to do, but to get to that shot where he falls out on the ground and the alien comes up and he puts the claw back on and stabs that alien in the head, and then the camera spins and it brings to them there. That was not like figured out at all. So that was the whole thing that was like at lunch, me just being like, and working with the DP. And then that part got connected to it.
I hate you so much sometimes. You're so fucking talented. It drives me nuts. But this is the thing though. This is what I was going to say along with that is, as somebody who watches a lot of really bad action movies and a lot of really bad horror movies, the number one thing, you got to hire talented professionals. Even if they're inexperienced, they got to be talented professionals, because talented professionals can do that stuff. You know, we've got a friend, big listener of the show, Aaron Vargas. He's an up and coming stuntman. He is an extremely talented professional. You watch his YouTube clips, he can do it. And that's the thing, Brahim, you are obviously like, you're beyond that. You're like an insane through the roof talented professional. But
thank you.
You need to hire good people, and good people can make magic happen, even if they have to make it up on the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd echo that. Yes. Like I would be completely exposed if you put me in a low budget movie without great collaborators, you know, like, it, you know, I think a lot of directors would be, you know, that's why you have to be careful, like Brahim said, about what project you're going to put your stamp on, because you will find yourself in projects where there's not enough days, there's not enough money, you're not going to be able to bring in the people that can do it to in order to do these action movies in these time constraints at these budgets. You got to put your value system somewhere, and I always try to put it towards the stunt professionals, because that's what's going to actually get me the best fights in the time that I have.
Yeah, because like Liam said, you know, like the movies, we are not getting 90 days of shoot. You're getting like between like 25 days to 35 days at most, if you're lucky. Nowadays, you know, back in the days, I did movies, you know, in Thailand, where we shot them in 16 days, 18 days. It's very, very complicated to do these kind of movies. You know, you almost have zero time to do anything. You're not talking about days. Sometimes you're talking about hours to do a fight. So to get like the right people to join you is necessary. You know, even if you're having like Ico or Scott, well, they're gonna need to fight people in that movie. So if you're bringing like an experienced stunt performer, I think Scott was talking about this in one of his podcasts one time. He was talking about like sometime he would do movies and then some of these producers would bring him like stunt performers who can't fight well, they are like newbies, and then they would be like all happy that they're on set with Scott, and then all out of nowhere he would be like so pissed off at them because they can't perform how he wants. And I think that's very important because, like, first of all, you're frustrating your lead actor. Second, the result on the camera is not going to be good. So like Liam said, like putting the money where with the stunt people is always like the most important. I mean, not to say like stunt people are the most important on the set, but for the action, you know,
you're making an action movie.
Fast. Yeah, but you need to move fast. Like,
I mean, yeah,
there's no time.
I don't want to get into it because I don't want to keep you too long, but like what you and Scott and everybody else did on Hard Target 2, like that time frame that you guys shot that fucking movie, and the fact that not only is that movie watchable, but it's actually kind of entertaining as hell is unreal. And it is a filming experience that no filmmaker should ever have to deal with. Like it is a time constraint that nobody should ever have to deal with.
18 days. When I hear something like when I hear this number 18, I'm like, well, that's going to be one hell of a ride. It's tough, man. 18 days shoots are there. It's complicated, man. And you know, that's why, like you were telling me before, like, okay, what do you like working more in India or China or more in the West? I believe like in the East, in Asia, people tend to respect more the action side and they tend to prioritize and put more time. In China or Hong Kong, you know, the action is king. They would spend time shooting the action, you know. Even in India, they would spend time. They would let the action director, the stunt guys, take care of it. So I believe, you know, if you tell me like where is a bit the difference is this, like in the West sometime, you know, it's kind of like some directors, not every one of them, but some directors have more of an ego and then they prioritize more the drama side. And then they tell you, well, make magic in 1 hour now. I had that many times. Like I would be like, they would spend like 9 hours shooting like a close-up, and then they would be like, okay, I give you 2 hours now to do like a 3-minute fight scene. So if you tell me the difference, there is the difference between, you know, the East and the West at times, you know. But stunt guys and having talented people on your movie set, it is key. It's not like a one-man show. It takes like a village to do all this stuff.
If I may, for a brief minute, just to the slightest of detours, your filmography is vast, but I also see that you've done some video game work as well, notably in the last two Assassin's Creed games, Mirage and Valhalla. Comparatively to Western filmmaking to Eastern filmmaking, what is that like? How does that also differ as well?
The motion capture, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the motion capture, actually, I only did one. I did Mirage, Assassin's Creed Mirage. And the difference is basically, you know, you, first of all, you're in a nice studio. You're not sweating much. You have a nice suit on. And it's, how can I say, it's much more comfortable doing that kind of stuff, like compared to a movie. And you know, it's much more enjoyable, let's say. That's how I would say. Yes.
Okay.
No sweating, you know.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we actually sorry, Vice, go ahead.
No, you're probably gonna say we talked to several people who have experience with the games. And recently we spoke to Chad Michael Collins, the star of the Sniper movies. And he's both the star of the Sniper films, but also a star in the Call of Duty games, the new games. He's the Alex Mercer character, and he was talking about the similar experience where you know, you're on this on the set is one thing, but then you kind of have more, I guess, latitude or leeway in the studio for the game capture. Just kind of go be more free. And then we have another friend, James Newman, as well. He's done other captures for the Call of Duty games as well. He does like the animations for the executions. When the player character can do a close up kill, he does those motions. And he was saying something. Yeah. He was like, although I guess in that case of, like, you know, the people who make Call of Duty, the money is there, so they have all these big institutions, these big facilities to capture everything. So they said something very similar to that as well. Yeah,
much more comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was actually just texting Liam because there was something we wanted to talk about, but I was on the same page, but then I also realized I have to talk to you, Brahim, because we don't want to keep you forever. You did stunts on a movie directed by Keanu Reeves. Yeah. This is a thing that we need to talk about because we are a pro Keanu podcast. What was it like working on Man of Tai Chi?
Well, Man of Tai Chi, it was an early experience in my career. You know, it was back in 2011. I remember I used to send my demo reel to Mike Leader every year. I would send him my demo reel when I would update it, and after New Year, he sent me a message. He asked me like, "Can you send me a new demo reel? I might have something for you." So I sent it to him. And then he put me. I got hired on the movie by Yuan Wuping's stunt team to join the movie, and then I worked, of course, with Keanu Reeves. You know, he was directing the movie, and he was nice, super chilled. That's probably, I would say, one of the best experience I had working in China doing that movie, because, you know, I always grew up watching Yuan Wuping movies, so I was wanted to kind of like work with him and his team. The final result of the movie, I would say I was a little bit I was a little bit disappointed in a way that the way they edited the movie, it was not really, like, I would say, something that I was expecting, like having like so many cuts in the fights. But working with him was good. Then after that, I worked again on John Wick 4 with him. But then I remember when I was walking down the hallway, like, and he was passing by as John Wick. And then he looked at me and he was like, "I remember you," like this. Oh, that's great. He's a Man of Tai Chi. "I remember you." I was like, "Oh, yeah, good. Say, okay, good. That's it." That's how all he said to me. "I remember you," like this, man. But on Man of Tai Chi, it was kind of like, you know, the Keanu Reeves you know before John Wick.
Yeah.
And then when you see him now as John Wick, you know, it's something when you see him as John Wick coming in, man. It's like, you know, it's something, man. It gives you chills, man. When
the Baba Yaga.
I saw him as John Wick, I was like, wow.
But that is what's interesting, is because I think that Man of Tai Chi is kind of where the Baba Yaga was born, because I still think his line at the end, his last fight with Tiger Chen, where he comes in and he just goes, "You owe me a life." Like, that to me is just like, that's where John Wick is born. Like, that line is where he's really, like, creating that character. But I just, you know, Keanu's an actor whose reputation precedes him. We've all seen his interview with Scott that I do love, because I would get texts from Scott about that was coming up. And I do love when my favorite actor, who I am, like, ecstatic to know, is like fucking freaking out that he's getting to interview this actor that he can't believe. Like, it's so funny that we're all fanboys. Like, regardless of how famous we get, we're all still fanboys for somebody.
But that was kind of like great what Keanu did, huh? When he appeared on the Art of Action, the Scott show, that's really, really something that I didn't expect, it that Keanu would do something like this. That shows you the character of the man, how I would say like very down to earth he is, and how like very easy to access he is. It's on the set, you know, he's very, very chilled, down to earth, no ego. I remember when I was doing the fight scene on Man of Tai Chi, you know, he came to me with a bottle of water. He's like, okay, get some water. Like, that's the director. That's the, like, they're doing this to me. And Keanu Reeves, you know, he's a big, big, big star of The Matrix, John Wick. So, you know, like, yeah, it shows you the nature, the character of the man. Because some people, you know, even though they don't have that body of work like Keanu Reeves have, they have more of an ego, like, compared to someone like Keanu Reeves. So I would say, man, yeah, if someone deserves a career comeback like Keanu Reeves had with John Wick and the success that he had with it, that's him, man. You know, he deserves it.
Brahim, I got to be honest with you. I could keep you here for another 3 hours. I still have so many questions. There are so many things I want to ask you about, but we try and pride ourselves on not taking up the entire days of our guests. But
thank you.
You will have a state. You absolutely have a standing invite to come back whenever you want. When we're certainly gonna. So whenever Warpath comes out, whenever that may be, this show is gonna be dedicated for like 2 months to nothing.
No, 2 months of Warpath.
So you Warpath. You are absolutely coming back, but I am going to give Liam and Vice a chance if they have any other final questions they want to ask you or any other final things they say. And then we've got a few things to talk about, so we'll let you go and we'll wrap up. But Liam, any last things you want to say to Brahim?
I mean, there's obviously the big undisputed four questions but maybe we save that meat on the bone for next time. But, you know, a huge fan of that franchise, huge fan of your work in Part Four. And that was like, one of the things that when your name came up for Warpath, it was like, oh yeah, Boyka, yeah, you guys had a great fight in that movie. So let's save that one. But I just wanted to mention it as an awesome, as both an actor and, you know, a stunt performer, a perfect kind of showcase for your gifts for anyone who may be listening to the show that hasn't seen it. Although sometimes you never know, there's blind spots. Yeah. So definitely check out Undisputed Boyka.
Yeah, there's people that have blind spots. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Vice, any last comments?
No, just once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming in. Like I said, we hope to have you back sometime again soon in the future. Because again, to go through all your career will take forever. But also, and a key point to the show is that we're trying to kind of diagram and document for history purposes the evolution of action. And you are definitely a key member of a component of this modern action. So thank you again for all your time.
Yeah,
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This show started because I had a theory that 21st century action ran through Scott Adkins. He is the branch or the tree that all other action in the 21st century branches off of. But like, you're as much a part of that as he is. You have literally been in everything that we talk about on this show. Like, yeah, like you are you and Tim, and that is the one thing, Liam, we need to have you back because we got to talk about Undisputed Four, because we got to talk about that was really the first time you and Tim became you and Tim, and that
we need to get Tim on the show.
Yeah,
you may have better luck than I did because
I'm gonna convince him.
Yes, send him this episode. Send him this episode.
I'd send it to him.
I had a conversation with Tim, and for those who don't know, Tim, it was a conversation I was having with Scott. It was when they were filming Castle Falls, I think, and Tim came over to Scott's room, and Scott was like, "Oh, Mike, talk to Tim." And unfortunately, for anybody that knows Tim, and Brahim, you know this, Tim has no filter. And so as a podcast host, what you end up happening is you end up with an interview that you can't post because Tim will absolutely tell you things that you can't post. So if you can convince Tim to be well-behaved, I would love to have him on.
You know, the thing with Tim, you know, Tim is a great guy, man. Tim is like, always say this to people. I say, without Tim, there is no Brahim. Okay. Like, Tim is the guy really who gave me a lot of chances in my career. You know, he taught me a lot of things over the years. And I think, you know, I always see him as, he's my Yoda, I would say. You know, he's like, every time I need some advice, I go to Tim and I ask him for advice. But he can also be, you know, he's a very, very reserved person.
Yeah, he really...
But he's one of the funniest guy there is that I know, man. He's a very funny guy.
I was rolling. Like, I was dying. The entire time I'm listening to this, rolling and dying and just having a blast, I'm like, I can't post any of this. Like, but that's the thing with Tim is I also know he doesn't love doing interviews, but I would love to do an interview like this with him, an episode like this with him, because I think he is such a brilliant, important fight choreographer. So Brahim, if you can make it happen.
I'll do my best. I'll ask him, you know, me, I always tell him, I always told him like, man, you need to do more of this stuff.
Yeah.
Try to do it more. But like I said, he's very reserved. And like you said, he doesn't have a lot of filter, but he's a great guy, man. He's a very, very good guy.
Just tell him I'll edit the hell out of whatever I need to. It's fine. Like, the problem so the problem is again, this was, you know, Scott and he had just finished a day on Castle Falls. And so all three of us we'd had more than one drink. And so there was a little bit of maybe we should have planned this a little better, but I had such a wonderful time talking to him. So I'd love to get Tim back on.
Yeah. Let's do it. One day we get Tim on the podcast.
All right. Brahim, if people want to follow you online, obviously they can follow your work, but if they want to follow you online, where's the best place for them to follow you?
On Instagram, BrahimChab84. That's my Instagram.
Perfect. Excellent. And we are waiting to see what you and Liam are cooking up for Warpath. You guys are going to be doing some good stuff, and obviously we'll always follow you. Your name is a name that anybody listening to this show, I know a lot of people already do, but if you don't, Brahim is a name that is, well, circling it back, it's a stamp of quality. If Brahim's name is on a movie, it's a stamp of quality. You should watch it immediately. So thank you, my friend. We'll let you go. Like I said, we got a few things to talk about after, but yeah, you can log out and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks you guys. Have a good one. Thank you for having
me. Thanks again.
Of course. Thank you.
I really sometimes hate with this show that I cannot keep these people here for like 6 hours. I can't even get to, you know, and Max sent me a couple of questions and it's just like, but I mean, that's the thing. We don't want to waste their time too, but that was, Brahim was an absolute prince of a human being, as I expected he would be. That was wonderful. Vice, we're going to have Mendelsohn on to kind of talk about Monkey Man. Do you want to wait and talk more in depth about the movie with him next week? Or do you want to give your thoughts other than just a quick recommendation?
No, I'll wait till then. We'll definitely get to more spoiler territory then one thing I'll bring up more in depth in that conversation next week is that, we mentioned before, if you haven't already, please read our friend Sidon Alaka, his review of Monkey Man, because he gets to do a very specific point of view about the kind of the tensions between the supposed like criticisms of Indian government and the caste system, and how it does and doesn't, or how successful it is or isn't in the movie. And you don't have to have a historical context of India to get what it's doing. So I want to get into that some more and then next week, and we'll get to that deeper.
Yeah, no, but it's very much like an RRR thing, right? It's like, if you know, you know. And so that's something that does have to be like kind of reconciled.
Yeah, and I guess the other point is that there's, as I mentioned, talking with Brahim, like there is a very strong spiritual, religious part of it that it's actually, I really enjoy that. It gives the movie a greater depth and texture, and it's nothing, it's something that we should shy away from. It's just because it's a quote unquote foreign culture, it doesn't mean you have to like be oblivious to it or blind to it. Like it's a kind of movie that actually invites that introspection from other people, but not just people within the faith. I wanted to say it's a faith-based movie in a certain regard, but I'll explain more.
The Sound of Monkey Man.
But I don't think that's unreasonable. I mean, I think there's a decent, you know, I wrote an entire essay for Neon Splatter about how Boyka's entire motivation is faith-based, and that he is this devout Catholic murderer, and his entire motivation is trying to atone.
You're right. In that regard, it is very similar in that aspect, this kind of faith-based. But again, I definitely want people to check it out. They haven't already, because I guess the other part of the conversations are the box office numbers. It's not doing well. I guess it's scoring 10 million this weekend, which is
was going to do as well as I love that Scott pointed out, you know, never confuse online buzz for real world box office numbers
I mean, 10 million is like not what like it used to be. So like 10 million is still, it's very hard to get to now.
I don't think you could consider it a failure.
Yeah,
I don't think you consider it a failure.
Not anymore. Not in this world. Like getting 10 million for a movie that, let's be honest, they just launched this at South by Southwest. That was like a month ago. This wasn't like a 6 month marketing campaign.
Mark Dacascos would fucking kill for a $10 million opening movie. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not singling out Mark. I'm just saying that like, that's like, yeah, you can't. Hey,
Skyline made like 11 million, you know, or 14 years ago, and I'm still fucking coasting off of it. So
I should say Liam O'Donnell would kill for a
day. Yeah, yeah, no, that's what I mean. 10 million's not what, no. even back then, getting a 10 million is still like, but especially for this movie with, you know, I know its budget is, it's always a little murky when it's these kind of neg pickup acquisitions and all that type of stuff, but
it's just a marketing campaign. No, it's just a little bit of, you know, given again the buzz online, I think people have a little unrealistic expectation about what a movie was supposed to. I mean, because even Immaculate and The First Omen aren't, you know, this is where I love talking to Scott, because I am an amateur box office guy, and I love like having these conversations with him about like, well, okay, a movie that costs $2 million to make and makes $10 million versus a movie that costs $200 million to make and makes $250 million, those are not the same. Like one of those is putting a lot more money in producers' pockets than the other one.
Don't expect, if you haven't already seen it, this is not the kind of action blow up bonanza I was kind of presuming it might have been based on the hype of word of mouth. It's definitely more like it's kind of obvious in hindsight now. It's a definite movie insofar as like, you know, it's like a staid drama that is dark and like mysterious and like, you know, it has a lot that you would expect a guy like him to be in, but it also has like, you know, brutal knife deaths. So keep that in mind.
I saw a really good description. It might have been Brandon. It might have been Matt Esri. Somebody on Twitter described it as it's for the people who like the gritty crime drama parts of The Raid 2 and not the like kitchen knife fight.
Oh, and, that was me actually.
Yeah. Oh, was that you? Oh, shit. Sorry, Vice.
Some wise man.
I apologize, Vice. I'm sorry.
I'll elaborate on it. It's like, you know, people don't like, well, from what I kind of gathered, people don't like the Ong Bak sequels as much as like the original one. Because, you know, the original one's like a, you know, shotgun to the face. Wow.
Oh, right. That was you. Because you brought the spiritual Ong Bak.
Yeah, and then Ong Bak 2 really gets like weird. This is more of like, this is like the weird part of that kind of action equation. And like, I love that shit. I love when it's weird, you know.
Yeah, I got to be honest. You actually sold. I tried to get to it this weekend, but I just couldn't for. But I got to be honest with you. That tweet sold me on this movie harder than any of the trailers ever did, because I am a weird ass Ong Bak sequel defender.
Yeah,
like I fucking love the weird ass Ong Bak sequels. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So is this definitely not in that territory? And then another thing is that there's that weird switch part, but like I was thinking a lot of, I mentioned just now with Brahim, I thought of the Beekeeper. Also thought of Mayhem/Farang as well. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one of those same concepts. This is a real movie that also happens to have like high level martial arts in it. The actual real drama first, and then you see all the fucking blood splatter beyond that.
I didn't want to interrupt him, but it was really hard when Brahim was talking about his views on like the action he wanted to create to not come up with Farang, because like that literally he was saying the same stuff that Farang does, right?
Yeah, like it's definitely that same vein.
Yeah.
So I actually really appreciate that we have this year Farang and Beekeeper, as crazy as it is, and now Monkey Man, but they all still have a similar I'm trying to think of a different word, not quite faith-based. There's this conviction of the
spirituality,
character.
If you will. Well,
yeah, there's a spiritual conviction to what they're doing, like a more moral righteousness that does seem to have various religious or spiritual undertones to it. But like that's part of the text of the movie, is that what they believe in it as much as that they are just badasses. They're not just Dalton coming into the field of the roadhouse.
Right, to clean up something. No, there's a moral imperative to what they're doing.
Yeah, I really like that, you know, calm too.
There is a moral imperative. Speaking of which, I apologize to everybody that I have now become a very, very big Mozilla fan. I am constantly tweeting Mozilla fan art because I love them. I will love them forever. The one I tweeted out the other day of Mothra, it's from a Twitter called Kaiju Crew, but it's literally Mothra saying, "Did you really miss me?" And then it's a picture of Godzilla with like a Mothra t-shirt and holding these Mothra toys and all these Mothra posters on his wall. And he's like, you know, so I'm all about, I'm like completely Mothzilla pilled at this point.
I'll save the rest for next week, but definitely recommend checking it out. You know, it's, you know, just taking it out its own terms. I'm like, try to avoid the hype. Even if I'm hyping up to you, like don't ignore my hype. Just kind of experience it for yourself, and you'll get probably the best result.
So we got some announcements, but I'm going to let everybody plug their shit first. So Max, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, on the Discord, usually a variation of ODST Spartan. You'll probably find the next few weeks, I have some appearances with Dan Grima over at Blind Spots and Rob with his Wrath of Staff.
And, he actually thanked you. You apparently like bailed him out this week. So
he texted me like at 1 a.m. while I was recording with Dan if he could help. And I was like, sure. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. This is why we love you, Maxie. You're always here for us. Vice, where can people find you?
Oh, there's a game. You froze.
Back up. We're not going to edit this out, so back up. But you froze, so start over.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Vice with this. And by the way, huge shout out to our boy, the film Twitter dollar himself, Brandon Stresnick. He came to New York this past week. Did some big things. He probably knows it already. He had a big interview with the man, Zack Snyder. So, but during his various travels and adventures in New York, I met up with him. We had a lovely time, just the loveliest time at all, and the day evening. So I have some pictures of with me and some of my other friends there. I finally updated my reviews for the past month or so. So I'll have that in my review of Monkey Man on my Letterboxd at my Life with This, where I'm smart. And as always, to one of us dies, I might die. I might pass out from this fucking sinus infection I have right now. Oh my God, this is killing me. This is the worst part. You have a serious interview, but like your brain is exploding. I just want to take a nap. So I'll do that after. So until one of us dies, I'll be on Twitter at MathVictus talking all this shit.
And Liam O'Donnell, where can people find you?
Twitter, Instagram, Liam Odin. I've become a little bit more of a professional podcaster where I will just go and pee now, because other times I would just be sitting here being like, we have to end this pod right now. So I just came back. So sorry if I
missed just no, a you're bit good. Of a wrap up. It's way better. It's way better. I learned that a long time ago. Like, don't hold it. Just
go. Just go, man.
No, because the only person that can't go is the host. But that's part of also when I'm like, I'm just going to let Vice handle this for a minute, because I will peace out, because I got to go take a piss. So yeah, just go, man. Don't pinch it off. Nobody wants
I do want to just do a quick little thing about this past week, and the Matrix 5 news and the little kerfluffle that all caused. And, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about the Matrix 4 on this show. And, you know, we're the age that the three of us are, and, you know, Max being a little bit younger. Like, we grew up with that first movie. It was obviously a huge seismic event for all of us. And I think there's a lot of, like, ownership and feeling in that franchise that then's kind of grown, and it's transformed literally into different allegories that mean different things to different people. So I think a lot of people, when they hear a Matrix 5 and it's going to be kind of an action-based approach, it's pretty exciting. And then you kind of have to weigh, you know, a little bit more of the responsibility of that franchise and what it means to the trans community as part of this, you know, this is the Wachowski's sort of grand artistic statement. And so, yeah, I think it was a good reminder from Mike as to, you know, what that meant. And you'd think I'd be sensitive to it in myself, just because I've been working on this other franchise that's kind of been my own thing. And there's been times when other people have kind of tried to take it from me, and sometimes from not even the producers, just outside other people trying to make pitches about it and stuff. So, yeah, it's a little early, because I think, you know, like, there's a million different projects that have been announced with guys like Drew Goddard that never get made.
Yeah, and, for sure.
And it's also like, I don't think we've officially heard any statement from Lana. I know I saw some likes from Lily, which seemed kind of funny. But, you know, we'll see exactly how things shake out with it. I think there is an interesting opportunity, even if it is him, to you know, be a positive ally and hire the right people and give people the right showcase on something like that. But yeah, we'll see. I understand how people would be upset though on either side. And yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, David Zaslav is the head of Warner Brothers. I think he's just trying to pump the value of it and make a bunch of different big announcements, and we'll see what everything happens.
Yeah. And that's ultimately right. Like, that's the thing, like, is because I was pretty pissed off, but I also am not unaware that this is all being driven by David Zaslav. Like nothing that's happening about this can be assumed to be in good faith. And I don't mean that from like Drew Goddard's standpoint. Like, I don't have any question that Drew Goddard probably has a very good faith pitch for the Matrix. You know, it's the umbrella that's over him. But I agree with you, Liam. It's too early to really engage in this in a way other than to just establish, like I did, that maybe taking, you know, a creation from trans creators and giving it to a cishet white guy is bad optics, because I think that's objectively true. I think that is objectively bad optics. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. But I also think people like yourself and other ones being vocal about that and talking about it, it's good. It's a net pot. Like, you have to do those type of things, otherwise, you know, straight people will just sleepwalk through life.
They'll just be excited that there's going to be Kung Fu in the Matrix.
Right. Oh, right? Yeah, exactly. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, not to like relitigate Matrix 4 again, but I was just thinking in my head about this as it was happening. This album didn't happen. It didn't exist when this came out, but now that it does, I was thinking of how like the Matrix 4 is like a 103,000 food album. It's like a kind of this weird like offshoot on purpose. Mm-hmm. So for people like who like don't like Matrix 4, not because they like they hate trans folk or they hate, it's like, no, it's like a
right, which is what I specifically was saying on the Discord. Like, please stop associating me with disliking Matrix 4, because I don't want to be a part of the disliking Matrix 4 fan club. Because the thing is, I actually like the part of Matrix 4 that is Matrix 4. I just don't like meta stuff in general. Like, yeah, it's not my genre. I don't like hearing Warner Brothers spoken in a Warner Brothers movie. It breaks it for me. That's all.
Funny. I need to make this very clear for everybody listening to this show, everybody on the Discord, everybody that follows me on Twitter. I could give two shits that Liam doesn't like the Matrix 4. I like to bust his balls about it, because I thought the conversation that he, Vice, and Aaron Stewart had about
it. It was a good one.
Was one of my favorite conversations on this show. Please, please, please do understand that there is zero way that Liam is associated with 99% of the other fuckers that don't like Matrix 4. Like it's fine. There are 1,000 different reasons you could criticize the Matrix 4.
I was just funny because like, I was lying in bed trying to go to sleep and I saw the movie.
Andre 2000 flute is great.
Yeah, because then on the same hand, it's like if you like the flute album, like that's good that you do love, but like I think it's it kind of works both ways. Like if you like the flute album, or no, if you don't like the flute album, that's fine. But you can still respect what it's trying to do. Like the movie. But if you do like the flute album, you can't, in good faith, compare it in the same wavelength to Outkast music. It's not the same thing.
No,
it's a disservice to both the new stuff and the old stuff.
That's a very, very good point, because that would be my point, is like what you've got is a fucking weirdo being given all the money in the world to make a fucking weirdo ass movie and or record. And like running with that, and for me that like rules, although I don't like the food album because it doesn't sound like Outkast, so like I can't blame somebody for that. What I can blame people for is not actually engaging with the Matrix 4 as a statement, as a thing, as a Lana Wachowski movie. It doesn't, you know, I don't get the, well, the kicks aren't cool, so I don't like it. Liam, you and I have obviously had so many fucking... I'm not sure. Is there a movie we've talked about more than The Matrix 4?
No, and the funniest part is that on the episodes before it came out, I was like, only an asshole wouldn't like this movie. And then I was the guy who didn't like it. And I do think... I think it was someone tweeted like, yeah, a good way to tell someone is cool is whether they like Matrix 4. And I generally agree with that because all my coolest friends love Matrix 4. So I'm kind of in the pro camp while still just being like, man.
Here's how, because I saw that same tweet and I'm going to rephrase that. If somebody likes Matrix 4, I'm going to probably assume they're cool. Them not liking Matrix 4 doesn't make them not cool.
Sure. It's a little basic. And as we've always said, I'm a little basic. So it's fine.
Because there is an entire... this is the problem, right? With all things, there's an entire... I'm trying to sign us off, but I didn't watch Monkey Man because I watched a documentary on Netflix called The Antisocial Network that is about the rise of 4chan and how 4chan started as this fun, amazing thing that for those of us that are extremely online, we're massively a part of, and led to the fucking January 6th insurrection. And it's a really does drive home the point about how you can have valid opinions about things, but the problem is the shittiest people known to fucking man will also share those opinions. And you're kind of fucked. Like, look, man, I don't want to get into it too much. I love guns. I am a big gun guy. I own several guns. I'm also super pro, like mega restrictive gun control. Gun nuts are the biggest pieces of shit on the face of the earth, and they can fucking die in a fire. So like, I'm stuck. I don't talk about guns because I'm stuck because I don't, like Liam says, I don't want to be associated with these fuckers.
Right.
So yeah, anyway.
That was great. That was great. And you know, I think I should watch that because I feel like the whole 4chan thing, I missed that. I was a Hollywood fuckboy during that period.
It's also,
I don't really know what's going on.
It's also a really fun documentary. They use a lot of really cool animation and it's really like almost like Tony Scott edited. So it's not just an hour and a half of talking heads. It's like an actual like propulsive, it almost feels like an action movie, except unfortunately the only way it can end because of the world that we live in is it's like a bummer fucking action movie, right? It's like the opposite of most action movies because it starts with the training and the awesomeness and all this cool shit and Chan culture. And then it's like, oh fuck, we broke the world. We literally broke the fucking world.
Jesus.
It's so good. And it's only 85 minutes.
Awesome.
So, because they know their target audience, they know Chan people are not going to watch a 2-hour movie. So, anyway, all right, that's fine. We can get into this more. But the one thing I do want to say, guys, is we are coming back next week with Scott Mandelson. We're going to talk more about Monkey Man. We're going to talk about box office stuff. We're going to talk about how Godzilla X Kong shouldn't have surprised anybody because but nonetheless, it is doing good. We're going to do all that shit. Summer preview, all of that. And then we're going to take a couple weeks off because we are trying to reevaluate what we want this to be. I need everybody listening to be clear. A4E is not ending. A4E is going to continue in some form. In fact, part of this is I am taking a step back from the show because I have other things I want to do that are part of A4E that will continue to make this bigger and better. I just can't keep doing it if I have to do this every Sunday. So this is not in any way, shape, or form the end. We are going to keep going. These assholes on this podcast are some of my favorite people on the face of the earth. We had a chat on Friday that lasted like 2 hours. Like, I fucking love these guys. So we are not going away, but we're going to take a break. We're going to reevaluate. We're going to come up with some new shit. Brandon and Liam are going to be doing Wrestling for Everyone. Max is on board with editing that. And again, none of this is going to be the one thing I will say is do not get in the habit of expecting a like regular release. We're going to do this stuff as we want to, as we feel like it, as it moves us. But A4E is going to continue. We'll still be here. So that's the thing I want everybody to understand. All right. Any last thoughts from you guys?
It's like, honestly, the visual is you now. Go buy the shirt. Go buy my merch.
Yeah.
You get a shirt.
Yeah.
Now you have A4E in perpetuity. So it's you now.
Very important. Everybody needs to hear this. That's going to Big Bad Film Festival. This came up on the Discord. I am putting it out here during the Big Bad Film Festival. If anybody can actually punch Andy Gorham in the nuts, they will get a free A4E shirt. So if you can punch Andy Gorham in the nuts at some point during that weekend, I will give you a free A4E shirt or hat or whatever your A4E product of choice is. I will give you a free one if you can punch Andy Gorham in the nuts during that weekend.
What y'all doing over there at Discord, man?
Number one goon squad. Number one.
Oh my fucking god.
All right, with that, we are actually gonna sign off. And yes, thank you for having this end discussion that and everything. But it was great talking to you guys on Friday. Great here. Love you guys.
Next week, Mandelson. Love you boys. Let's do it again next week.
Cheers.